On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we dive into the retirement of Mark Baudin, the Las Vegas Raiders president. And does that spell trouble for the organization's front office? And what's that mean for the on-field product? We dive into what the valid concerns and invalid concerns are for the offensive line. And we finally got Juan Soto to say some good things about Derek Carr. It damn near killed him. Also, new sponsor alert, support for the Autumn Windbags brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Absolutely love it. The wife loves it. It makes everything look bigger down there. For some of you, that's a big deal. By some of you, I mean me. Don't forget, you can get 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code WINBAGS at manscaped.com. Again, that's promo code WINBAGS at manscaped.com. For 20% off and free worldwide shipping. Also, we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto here. Just
hello.
54 days away.
54.
Opening day for the Raiders, Allegiant Stadium, at home, prime time, Baltimore Ravens coming to town. Only 54 days away. Less than two months.
Greg Beekert or Reggie McKenzie, depending on your era. Yeah. If you're an 80s, like a mid to late 80s guy, that's Reggie McKenzie. If you're a late 90s, early 2000s guy, you're Greg Beekert.
Well, Reggie McKenzie is like a multi-generational guy, right? Player.
Oh, he wasn't 54 up in the rafters, you know, when he was.
Yeah, but your jersey number is always your jersey number. You know, I haven't played football in 20 years. I'm still number 25. Which was a really, really lame number for a linebacker tight end, number 25.
You were never supposed to hit the field, JR. You were never supposed to hit the field with that number.
Like, oh, you're like a running back or something? No, tight end, linebacker, obviously. What was your number?
I had two numbers. I had 67, and then I had 42.
Did some freshman come in who was better than you and demanded your jersey number? You had to give it up.
I started playing more on the defensive side, so I changed to 42.
Oh, okay. Because some freshman kicked you out of the offensive side, so you had to change jersey numbers?
Sure. I like defense better anyway.
Me too. I definitely did too.
A lot more fun.
Dude, linebacker?
You know what? Being an offensive lineman is pretty fucking badass. I'm not going to lie.
Well, that's why I really like tight end, because it's like the best of all worlds. Every play, you're either hitting somebody or you're running a route. Like, you get to do, like, you know, you're always kind of doing something, you know?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. But it was – you're always in the action, and you're always getting physical with somebody, you know? And we pulled a lot, and I was a guard. So, I mean, I was running all over the place.
Lead of foot.
I was running less as a defender.
Although I think – playing linebacker is probably the funnest position in any sport.
You know what? It's fun when you know what you're doing. If you're getting fooled by a lot of shit, it's hard to hide, dude. Like, if you're on the line and you fuck up, like, all right, there's a lot of guys around me. If you're a linebacker and you fuck up, there's, like, usually no one around you.
That's because the stakes are high. That's why it's so much fun.
Yeah, it's much space, right?
Like, you're going after the quarterback. You're covering running backs. You're tackling
Who's got
dudes.
The flat? JR! Yeah.
You're meeting the fullback helmet to helmet. Like, who wins? Who's going into the backfield and who's going upfield? You know what I mean? It's like
who's going into the ambulance?
Exactly. Like, you're the quarterback for the defense. You get to, like... You don't have to be that smart to be able to call the defense like a quarterback, but you can still call it like, oh, cover three, oh, blue, oh. And you can, the best was just like making shit up. I would just like tell my tackle, like, just go inside this time. And I would just blitz outside just to like try just random shit. And you can do that. You just say, hey, coach, I just saw something. You know, I just saw something. He's like, all right, that's okay. You're like, I don't know.
What the fuck kind of coach did you have, dude? That's freaking, we did that shit. Film session would be brutal.
Yeah, but I delivered the hit. Then it was okay.
Oh, yeah. Whatever.
As long as you deliver results. Speaking of results, Mark Badane, Las Vegas Raiders president, retired last week, and is a guy that utmost respect in the Raiders organization. He's been with the organization 30 years. He was there when they were in Los Angeles. He was there when RG was a seven-year-old picking his nose. He's been there forever. He was literally an intern driving people around in a truck.
Driving the shuttle truck, yeah.
And got all the way to the highest possible executive position you can have in the biggest sport in America, one of the most storied franchises in the NFL. Like, what a fucking success story, right? He delivered, man.
Yep. And he delivered. It wasn't like he's just the last man standing and just, okay, well, let's make him president. No, he had the goods, and he was a big part of that Allegiant Stadium. So it wasn't like he was some slapdick.
I like giving Mark Davis the credit for the move to Vegas, because just kind of how he was able to like swindle the taxpayers of Las Vegas for $750 million. He swindled Sheldon Adelson, like one of the richest men in America. Like, he just pulled all these fast tricks on everybody. And I love giving Mark Davis the credit because he looks like a goober, you know, like with the haircut and like the dad jeans and dad walking shoes and stuff.
Oh my God. Did you see him when he got the pictures, when he got into that?
We
car
talked
accident?
About it on this show, Soto.
Did we?
Yeah. You got to stop drinking. It was great. It was a great shot. He's got the
stonewashed jeans with the white t-shirt tucked in, white belt, all white kicks, the white man purse.
Ugh. And it's like, yeah, this is the dude that got more money for a stadium than anybody in the history of anything.
That's like the modern day old Al Davis white jumpsuit. That's the new one. That's the new all white look.
That's what like deadbeat son would wear to mimic it. Although, even though his son's far from a deadbeat, but he looks like one, right? And that's why I love giving Mark Davis the credit for all this. But obviously, Mark Badane deserves a lot of credit for it as well. He sent out a statement last week, or this is a statement from Mark Davis. Today, I've accepted Mark Badane's resignation as president of Las Vegas Raiders. Mark has been an integral part of the Raider family for 30 years, rising from a training camp driver to president of the entire organization. Credits him for the stadium, which is his family, the best of luck, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So happy trails to Mark Badane. Hopefully he enjoys his retirement.
Yep.
A couple thoughts before I go into an article from Scott Gulbrandsen. A couple things. One of them, this is so very Raiders. Like, you hear like a guy grassroots built himself up from nothing, from intern to president. The Raiders always considered themselves a family, like, you know, like Al Davis. Now his son has it. John Gruden was coach. Now he's back. Like, so many times the Raiders bring back former players as coaches, and you know, every team has an element of that, but the Raiders take it to the umpteenth degree. Yeah. And having a guy who was once like getting your coffee, and then, you know, 25 or so years later, he has the highest executive position you can possibly have, is very, very Raiders, for better or for worse. Because you like to have the idea like, okay, this guy knows the Raider way, but you're a multi-billion-dollar organization. Maybe like a guy with a Harvard MBA should be the team president. Maybe some dude who's, you know, a multi-million-dollar lawyer that had like a successful practice for 20 years should come in and be that guy. Mm-hmm. Not right or wrong, right? Like, do you go like in the UFC, right? Do you go the Dana White route? Would you have like some boxer size coach slash fight promoter come in and be your dude? Or do you go the NFL route and have Roger Goodell be your dude? Like, it's worked both different ways. And the Raiders have always kind of done the grassroots organic from within way.
Yeah. There's not another franchise in sports run like this.
Yeah.
It's, you're not going to hear a lot of things from the Raiders. They're very tight lipped. They keep their circles nice and tight, and they do things like a tight butthole. And it just seems to work for them.
Yeah. Does it always, though? Like, that's kind of...
Well, I mean, it doesn't always work for anybody. But, yeah, I mean, they're not like a destitute franchise. You know, they're making money, and they just moved to Vegas and have a tit stadium. So,
yeah. So Dan Ventrelli is going to be the interim president. He's been with the team for 17 years, and And so this is kind of like, okay, so what does this mean for like the team? What does this mean for the games? What does this mean for the players? Not a ton. We were office stuff. This is money stuff. This is, you know, stuff you do on the computer, not stuff you do on the field. But mm-hmm. I think it is indicative of how the whole team is run. For instance, like I just mentioned, like they're a very grassroots type of franchise where guys, you know, come in. But you do kind of get stuck in your own ways without a lot of outside influence, without a lot of like fresh blood to kind of like spur new ideas, people that have been new places. It's a diverse franchise, like first African-American head coach, Latino coach, all that kind of stuff. But I'm not talking that realm. I'm just talking just new ideas, whether it comes from a guy, a girl, an old guy, young guy, like that doesn't matter to me. It's just someone new coming in with, you know, sparking some creativity, right? And it seems like the Raiders, the best example is how terrible the Raiders social media is. Like, it's the most boring social media in all of football. We love Charles Woodson, or here's this guy that got cut, you know. And like, I'm a big, you know, Kings fan for hockey. The LA Kings Twitter handle, hilarious. It's always a gag, always makes me laugh, always something cool. Like, you can tell because, you know, it's Los Angeles, it's hockey. They're trying to be young. They're trying to be tech, trying to be clever. Like, it's just fun. But the Raiders is just like, here are some facts. Goodbye. And I think that's kind of like,
yeah, it's all it is. It's like very, yeah, very dry, very just straightforward, like old school, like newscaster.
Yeah. So here's an interesting way to think about this. Scott Gulbranson from Vegas Sports Today wrote an article a few days ago. Was there more to Mark Badain's resignation as president of the Las Vegas Raiders? Because there is a couple, I guess you can call them red flags. Kind of a weird time for this. This is very abrupt. Just kind of out of nowhere. Like, OTAs had already happened. We're in, you know, kind of a middle ground. And then training camp starting up in a few weeks. Like, you'd think, if you've been with an organization for 30 years, you'd have this like long succession plan. You'd be like, okay, after, you know, like, I wouldn't be like, if Mark Bardane came out and said, all right, after this season, I'm retiring. Right. I've been with this team forever. Time to spend time with my family. I'm an old man now. At the end of this season, you know, I'm going to move on. Here's my goals. Here's how we, you know, get the next guy up there. Like, get everyone up to base. And maybe this sort of happened behind the scenes. It just doesn't feel like that at all. And especially the way Mark Davis said, he's like, I accept his resignation, as opposed to saying something like, yes, we knew this was a long time coming. We've prepared for this. I'm so glad for every second I had with Badain. Like, no, he's just like, yeah, I accept this random thing that's coming my way. So the timing of it feels kind of abrupt. And again, the writer, Scott Gulbranson, said that he's talked to some members of the Raiders organization, some employees, not like players or anything, but some employees of the team that think that there was a little bit of a power struggle between Badain, the former president, and the current interim president, Dan Ventrelli, and that a lot of people were kind of taken aback by this, as if kind of insinuating that there is some trouble going on in the front and back offices of the Raiders. So again, I don't know Gulbranson all that well. He doesn't really give us any like hard evidence. Like, I talked to this person on the record who said this, but it's enough to make me think, because the Raiders have a history of having kind of a disorganized front office, right? Like, we've heard that Mike Mayock and John Gruden, I've heard it, you know, quietly, we've heard it kind of publicly, they're kind of butting heads a little bit, that Mayock's, it's not exactly the type of situation he thought he was going to be in. The way that guys get like shit canned constantly. It's like saying, hey, you know, I heard that the Raiders are going to draft poorly next draft. Like, yeah, that's kind of on brand. That's, you know, it's not that shocking. So to say, hey, right, there's some rumblings of some problems going on in the front office and the organization of the Raiders. Not a ton of evidence for me to say that's for sure the case, mm-hmm. but it's kind of on brand.
Yeah. It's not surprising. I'm not shocked. Mm-hmm. I mean,
are you
look,
worried? Do you feel like are there issues? Like, is this enough to make you say like, oh, God damn.
No, I'm not really that worried. There's something that you told me that kind of struck me a little bit. You talked about how when you have there's good and bad with sticking with like the Raiders model, right? You get people who know the culture, who kind of gain the respect of everyone from within, and who work their way up, and you know they're committed, right? Mm-hmm. But like you said, there's also something to be said for bringing in some new ideas. A lot of times when I used to work for a company that everyone who worked there was worked there for 10 plus years, all the executives at least. And I reported directly to the president. And there was things that I saw that didn't make sense because I used to work for other companies. I had my own company as well. And certain things were just didn't make sense. They were not efficient. They were not cost effective. So when I brought these things up, I got what I got back a lot was, that's how we do it. That's how we've always done it. Yeah. Blah, 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 this and that. And it's like, well, there are better ways to do things. It's because everyone's been taught the same way. They kind of follow that same doctrine. So it could be a good thing that there's some fresh blood in the organization now. Not to say anything bad about the former president Bedane, but I mean, it can't hurt. It the big stuff is already there. They're already in Vegas. They already have, you know, the splits down. They already have the stadium is being built and everything. Let's see what the next project is for the president to take a hold. But in that sense, it's a good time to get and start a new regime.
It's a great time if you're Dan Ventrelli. Like, yeah, the most expensive tickets in the NFL, a brand new stadium, a superstar coach, famous coach, like. You're like the whole Vegas is your oyster. Like you've got it's a great time to be Dan Ventrelli. Like what a great time to take over the Raiders. All the hard work's already done.
Dan, if you need some bud to help you pull a Fredo, I'm your man.
Yeah. So, I mean, if there was some kind of coup by Ventrelli to kick Bodane out, he's got great timing. Can't argue with the timing.
You know, I was in a similar situation, like I said, and I don't know how to keep my mouth shut. And I just would just bring up these suggestions. Mm-hmm. And someone finally told me, hey, man, you're making the rest of us look bad because you're making these suggestions. And I'm like, look, I'm not here to make you look bad. If I see something and I don't say something, if I see an improvement and I don't say it, then I look just as bad as you guys do. I'm not trying to look better than you. I'm trying to help the company because ultimately, if the company is around and the company's thriving, we all have a job.
Great humble brag by you, Soto. I was too good at suggesting ideas groundbreaking that I made everyone else look bad. No, I get it.
But the thing is, they weren't groundbreaking. It wasn't groundbreaking shit.
Just basic stuff.
It's basic shit.
Have you guys heard of calculators? You don't have to use these little like counting machines anymore. They've got these amazing TI-83. You know, it's great. Spreadsheets. You ever heard of Excel? It works.
You ever heard of a pivot table? Printing everything out. Like, what the fuck is this?
So what is it? What does this mean for the Raiders on the field?
Very little.
Maybe nothing, right? Solid opportunity to be nothing. But again, I do think how an organization is run is indicative of how everything else is run. Like billion-dollar companies and giant corporations are very complex animals. Like there's so many moving parts. There's politics involved. There's, you know, who's friends with who and who's, you know, who's delivering. Like I'm rewatching The Wire right now.
Great show.
Oh, dude. One of the best well-written shows ever in television.
I'm going to do a little aside right now. I think The Wire is the best written show of all time. And here's why.
That's what I just said.
No, you said one of the best. I said, okay. You know, it's the best.
Taking it over the top. Got it.
Take it over the top. Here's the reason why I think so. HBO, that was like one of their first, I think it was one of their first or their first show that they had on air. So every season was like its own show because they didn't know if they were going to be back the next year. They had no idea. Mm-hmm. Their whole TV shows and programming or their it's like TV shows, but their whole programming was fairly new at the time. Their original TV programming. So
Sopranos had already started.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oz had already been done. Right.
It was like the third one or
it was like 03. I think 03 is when it started. So
he was right there.
Yeah.
So it's like every year it was like, okay, well, after the year's over, let's see how we do. Okay, now let's go ahead and do another year. Mm-hmm. So it's like every year is like it's almost it's like its own show, but it's still meshed together. It's excellent. If you have it, Raider Nation, if you have not seen The Wire, watch The Wire.
Watch it before the Baltimore Ravens come to town on Monday Night Football.
There we go. It's
based in Baltimore. You can see what a trash city it is, so it makes it easy to root
from the
against
inside
it.
Out.
Yeah. But yeah, like, because it's five seasons, and every season is its own theme, right? The first season's the drug trade. Second season's, like, work and union. Third season's the politics.
Politicians.
Fourth is education. Fifth is media. And then yet it still maintains all the themes, even isolated.
You see it
from
a different perspective, yeah.
Yeah, and like it introduces new characters while still using old characters, flowing through everything. Like,
yeah, one of the main guys in one season will be like a guy that shows up once or twice the next year. Mm-hmm. A guy that showed up once or twice one year is going to be one of the main guys the following year. Like it's a sweet show.
Just watching Bunk and McNulty hit on chicks in the bar. It's pretty sweet. The little game that they did where Bunk pretends to be a drunken asshole to a chick, and McNulty comes in and plays like the white knight. I'm sorry for this guy. He's being an asshole. Let me get him out of here for you. Are you okay? Are you okay? Throws him in the cab, and then he bangs the chick. Brilliant.
We should do it, RJ.
Those are good. Hey, if we were cops, partnered together, we'd run a pretty good game.
We have to get some sweet stashes, though.
Okay, so time will tell on Mark Bedain. And if this, because another one last thing on this, I keep wondering why outside NFL writers keep thinking the Raiders are going to blow this season. Okay, question marks around the offensive line. I get it. You know, is the defense finally after 30 years going to turn the corner? Okay, I get it. But offense was great. They kept basically everybody added. Defense, the new coordinator, added a bunch of talent. Like, all general signs point towards them taking a step forward, but everyone says they're going to be last in the AFC West. Like, they were second last season and played the Chiefs fantastic. Like, what's going on here? The only thing I can think of is that these NFL media guys who are more plugged into the front office, like they got friends who talk and stuff like that. Maybe they're hearing what a clusterfuck it is in the front office of the Raiders. And that's why they're saying, oh, I don't think the team's gonna be that good that year. And they're just making up other reasons, the line, the defense, things like that. Cause they're not going to say, yeah, by name, my buddy who works there says it's a dumpster fire in the front office.
Yeah. Don't get it twisted, guys. What's the saying? The fish rots from the head down. If you're looking at all these organizations that are consistent, that are consistent winners, they have a good front office. You're not going to find a dumpster fire front office and they just happen to have a great team on the field. Even the fucking Browns had to kind of level themselves out after all their fucking shit to be able to put a product on the field.
Like, but oh, what's the reason for the Patriots' success? Tom Brady or Belichick? It's like, well, those two plus Robert Kraft
and his executives. Yeah. Right? And his executives
ran a good organization.
Yeah. So it does make a difference. Think of it like going to work at a place that it's just you don't like going.
Yeah.
You don't like being there. The product is not going to be as good as if you go to a place where you're valued and you're compensated properly and, you know, just the little things. You can have a lot of good workers at the job that you hate, but things just don't get done. And it makes a big difference.
If you're working at a place where you're constantly worried you're going to get fired, worried someone's looking over your shoulder, you know, thinking your boss hates you, your cortisol levels are going up, 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 and you're stressed and you're not going to be happy.
You're state of stress.
Bad juju, basically, right? If you're at a place where, you know, not like, you know, some kumbaya where you can be a total fuck up and everything's fine, but, you know, a place where, like, you're valued and, like, you know, if you speak up and say something, someone will listen to you, right? It doesn't mean they always do it, but they say, oh, you know, that's a great idea. Or, you know what, we tried that and didn't really work, but, you know, if any other ideas, let me know. You know, a boss's office where you can always knock on the door and talk to him. And, like, that makes a world of difference, right?
Yeah,
like, that
be consistent, be fair.
But an organization like that leads the top down, right? Like, we, you know, it's not like, you know, Darren Waller's, like, you know, making sales calls in the front office, but it bleeds towards everything. And if the players going to work and on the field kind of feel this, bad energy coming from the corporate side of things, it's an example of it. And it's also, and that's just kind of like a general feeling element to it. There's also just very tangible elements to it, right? Like if Darren, you know, I keep using Waller as an example. Like if he has, you know, an issue with his contract, does it take 2 weeks for someone to get back to him, or are they going to his locker that same day? Hey, buddy, we're taking care of it for you. Anything else I can do for you? Things like that, right? Like things like that, just like create a proper environment for success. If you can make that jump.
I use Amari Cooper as an example. Do you think Jerry Jones went into the locker room and asked, hey, anyone like to play chess so they can build that chess team for Amari Cooper coming over?
No, but I wish that happened. Right? That would have been awesome.
But that's an organizational thing. Yeah. That's not a head coach thing. That's not a owner thing. That's an organizational thing to be able to make, okay, why didn't he work here? Let me figure it out. Here's how we can do it here. Present it, get the okay, but that's an organizational thing.
Because there's no like department of chess in a football franchise, right? There's no like department of things to make the new receiver feel happy, right? That's not in someone's job description. But if you're in a team that's always thinking proactively, not the football team, but a corporate organizational team, these ideas start popping off. And like, you know, some secretary thinks of this idea, or some like VP of sales thinks about this idea, and they have nothing to do with it, but because they're a team and they're all like, sir?
Executive assistant, not secretary.
Some smoking hot secretary that's just there because we're big
madmen.
Yeah,
I like that. Now you're talking.
So we'll see how this pans out, and we'll see if we get some more kind of whispers coming out of the organization that maybe some things aren't as great as they could.
We'll find out sooner or later.
You love your Bleacher Report lists. So, I think we'll do this one.
Okay.
The biggest concern for every NFL team before the season begins, Gary Davenport, writer, is the one who did this one. And he listed, every single team in the NFL, and the Raiders' offensive line turnover was the biggest concern for him. And he said, few teams have bigger and self-inflicted concerns than the Raiders. And he mentioned how, you know, Trent Brown got cut, but he was a Pro Bowler. Rodney Hudson, Gabe Jackson got traded, even though they're above average starters. They tried to fill the gap with Alex Leatherwood, but can Rinchi Cognito stay healthy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I guess this one makes sense because it's a new concern. It used to be never a worry. It was always in the back of the head. Oh, we're paying the offensive line bajillions of dollars. They'll deliver. Let's worry about the defense. Derek Carr forever. But maybe they're just like over the same old question. It's like, will the defense give up another franchise record for most points? There's like, all right, let's think of something new. What word would you use to describe your feelings about the Raiders offensive line next season? Concerned, optimistic, hopeful, confident, excited, or worried?
I'm in between optimistic and hopeful.
Okay.
That's where I am. Okay. I'm trying to be more positive because you tell me I'm freaking negative Nancy all the time. So look, at least they didn't say the defense. Mm-hmm. Maybe they feel that, you know what, they've made some improvements on the defense. Bradley's going to make a big difference. A couple of the additions are going to make a big difference. The O-line, the biggest area of concern, and I feel that this way because you have a rookie, you have a new starter at center, and you have an aging veteran coming off of injury.
Yeah,
that's an area for concern no matter who you are, no matter what group it is. If you had a wide receiver core and, you know, amongst your top five, you have career backup who's just taking over a very good player's role. You have a rookie. You have a guy coming off of a season-ending injury who is older. Like, yeah, that would be an area of concern for me. Mm-hmm. Not because I don't think they'll play well, but how are they going to mesh? Because it's not about individuals when it comes to an offensive line. It's the sum is truly better than the individual parts when it comes to the offensive line. And the guys haven't played together before. You know, it is an area of concern because you haven't seen it before.
I'm in between, like, I don't feel like any of those adjectives truly describe it. I'd say it's more like I have questions. I'm not overly concerned. I'm not excited. I'm definitely not confident, but I'm not worried. It's just, I just have questions, like for all the things that you mentioned. We have a lot of guys returning, like guys that have been in the organization for a long time are there, right? Brand new center, but he's been there for a while and they believe in him. Richie Incognito, fantastic player if he can stay healthy. You know, Colton Miller, like, let's see how he does after getting his massive contract, right? I'm less like looking at the offensive line as making or breaking for our season. I'm not looking at the offensive line as, all right, this is like our defense last season where we were so worried. Like, if they can't get their act together, there's no way we can win. To me, it's still the defense. It's still can Gus Bradley and these new bodies and all of our expensive free agents and all these first round draft picks, can they mesh and work together? Like, that's still the ultimate, because we've seen this offense still work with a patchwork quilt offensive line last season. It wasn't even like we were an average-ish offensive line last season with everyone hurt, and they only played 3 snaps total, all 5 projected starters. And we still played well, and we still had a top 10 offense, right? But the defense was so bad and gave up a historic number of points that it didn't matter, right? So if the offensive line plays even remotely as well as it did last season, it's still on the defense to deliver. And you're right, like Tom Cable's already proven that even with not a lot of continuity and a lot of guys moving positions and guys getting hurt, the offensive line can still be okay. We want to be great, right? We want to be better. We want, you know, I want Leatherwood to succeed. Yeah, for sure. We all want Andre James to be as good as promised. We all want Richie Incognito to stay healthy. But if there's one coach on the team that's proven that you keep throwing shit at him, he can wipe it off and make chicken salad, right? Like, he's been proven it time and time again. So it's like, if there's any part of the roster where you're saying, all right, if bad things happen here, we're screwed, it's not the line. It's, they've proven time and time again that they can handle problems.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're saying, but I see why someone would say offensive line.
I think I can see why they're saying offensive line, because it looks like, again, like, it looks like they punted on the offensive line. Trent Brown, Gabe Jackson, from the outside looking in,
high level view.
Like, dude, we saved tens of millions of dollars in the cap and threw it on defense where it belongs. We got younger, faster, potentially healthier with those things, with those parts. And like, that's like, if you can save money and not and potentially lower injury, like, it should be a no brainer. Well, it's an exciting day for the Autumn Windbags. Ooh. Brand new sponsor.
Woo!
And it's a good one. Support for the Autumn Windbags is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below the waist grooming. The champions of the world. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. See what they did there? Manscaped just launched their 4th generation trimmer. The Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right. 4.0. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trusted Manscaped with its exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping. You can be in Uruguay and they'll ship it for free.
Wow.
But you do have to use our promo code Windbags, WINDBAGS, windbags at manscaped.com. I got mine in yesterday, already went to work on the twig and berries, cleaned everything up. They've got this, it's a very precision trimmer. My favorite part is it's got this little light. So when, like, you're getting there and you're like pulling your sack back and maybe the lighting isn't right in your bedroom or bathroom, you get a little light that lets you know exactly where to go. Yeah, you know, sometimes you're on the go, you know, wife's in the bathroom.
Did you get your pubes everywhere?
I'm thinking in the future, all right? Let the wife worry about that. Speaking of the wife, do it for her. You know what I'm saying? Like, my wife took my freshly shaved balls for a spin today, and she loved it. So if that makes her happy, that's all that really matters. So, Soto, along those same lines, how does your right hand feel about your freshly shaved balls?
Oh, my right hand loves it.
Yes.
My left hand is jealous. You know, look, I used mine as well. And I'm always concerned about using that little trimmer thing, because it's like two freaking, like, in essence, it's two, like, it's like a hair cutter thing going like that.
Yeah.
You know, back and forth. But no, it just felt like a little scratchy. Nothing big. It was all good down there. Got the undercarriage, the light. Yeah, you said the light's a really cool feature. You get the undercarriage, you get all that little, you know, do a little design if you want. Good shit. Do it for the ladies, bruhs. Do it for the ladies. Ladies, get one for your man if he's not going to go out and get one. It's a good gift for the whole family. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code WINBAGS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code WINBAGS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
So another first for us on this show, because I think we try to get things a little more balanced, you know, try to get off brand a little bit, like try to find an olive branch, if you will, mm-hmm. between you and me and the heated debate that is Derek Carr. So because like you hate Derek Carr and you want him to die and you want his children to cry and all that kind of 100%. Stuff. I figure what we should do is let's step into each other's other shoes, right? Like mm-hmm. I'll put on your size 11 and a half. You put on my size 10 and a half and let's go 12, the other sir. Way with it. Let's be objective. Big J journalists here.
Okay.
So we decided that I'm going to say 5 bad things about Derek Carr, things like parts of his game, parts about him, parts about being a quarterback for the Raiders that I don't like that he needs to work on or things that he can't work on or just things that are bad about him. Mm-hmm. And you, Soto, are going to do the hardest thing you've ever done in your life. And that's say 5 good things about the Las Vegas Raiders quarterback, Derek Carr. I have mine listed 1 through 5. I figure we go in reverse order, right? 5 to 1. I want to make sure we do this without you sweating profusely, punching your screen, biting your tongue. Like if you start bleeding out of your mouth because you keep biting your tongue and gums saying good things about Derek Carr.
My teeth.
Yeah. Like I want to be able to like get that out of the way quick. So,
okay.
Do you want to go first or second?
Are we doing one-on-one, like a one-off back and forth?
I think we go like 5 and 5, 4 and 4, 3 and 3, and then we go down back.
Well,
and
I have mine in no particular order. I just put 5 things.
So you're already half-assing this because you can't stand saying something good about Carr.
I put 5 really legit things about Derek Carr.
Okay.
Do I have to rank them? Okay. I'm just going to put them in the order that I have them.
The order that it popped into your brain.
Okay. Okay.
You do first.
Number 5.
Number 5.
I've said this before and
you're very hard, strict rankings.
Yes. Number 5, Derek Carr is excellent pre-snap.
See, I thought that was going to be much higher. Yeah. That was like your number 1 or 2. Okay.
He's not good. I mean, well, it was the first one to pop into my head, so I mean, it should have been number 1, I guess. Fine. But excellent pre-snap. Mm-hmm. There's not much you can say about it. There's not much bad you can say about him pre-snap. He pretty much knows exactly what's coming to him. The only time he really gets fooled is when it's something that he hasn't seen before, when a team brings up something brand new, like the Pats did a lot, mm-hmm. Or if you know one of his linemen fall flat on his face and don't pick up a body and he has to, you know, throw a ball under pressure, which is any quarterback really, but he's excellent pre-snap. That's number 5.
I'm also very curious, without having Rodney Hudson there, how much of the blocking scheme pre-snap is Carr versus Rodney. So like if he doesn't skip a beat in his blocking assignments, then you know it was Carr. If that's going to start to lag a little bit, maybe like Rodney should get a little bit more of that credit. But you're right. He's absolutely fantastic pre-snap. Even the strictest Carr haters can admit that. Number 5, he is so slow to build chemistry with offensive coordinators. And we use that as an excuse sometimes. Oh, he's had 4 offensive coordinators in 5 years. A lot of quarterbacks have had to deal with that and still succeeded. You know, Tom Brady, it took him 5 games to find a stroke. Brand new team, brand new part of the country.
Brand new everything. He had one guy, he had Gronk.
Everything. And he found his stroke halfway through the season, right? It took Derek Carr, you know, he has to be with the same crew for multiple seasons to be able to find a stroke. He has to be with John Gruden, a offensive mastermind, for him to be back at his, you know, 2016. So it's a valid excuse that it is harder for a quarterback with new offensive coordinators every season to find continuity and be better, but a lot of quarterbacks can do it. Derek Carr can't.
Yeah, it's one of those things where he's a system quarterback. He needs to know the system inside and out because he doesn't make plays off script. Players that can make plays outside of the confines of the offense, they still produce and they still do well when they're not completely comfortable with the system and the scheme.
Yeah.
If you're a system guy where you need to know the ins and outs of every little thing, yeah, it's going to take you some time to know that that way. So, yeah, you may struggle initially. Number four?
That comes before five.
Number four, Derek Carr is squeaky clean off the field. You're not going to find anything bad to say about the man as a person, as a father, as a husband, as just a general human being. He is a top-notch dude.
Yeah. You know, people made fun of him. Like, people try to turn that into a negative where it's like, yeah, well, he couldn't hang with John Gruden. They're two different personalities. It's like, so what does that mean? Rich Gannon was the biggest stick in the mud in the world, and he worked great with John Gruden, right? Like, especially Las Vegas, like the trouble you can find in Las Vegas. You got this diehard Christian guy, family guy, four kids, baby there, wife that's a rock. You follow his social media, it's all either him golfing or him like trying to woo his wife. Like, beautiful. Like,
always with the sleeves rolled up, though.
Always, yep, showing off those guns all the time, right? You never have to worry about your quarterback, you know? And we've seen like Deshaun Watson, like the only good thing going for the Texans. Even best case scenario, right? Best case scenario for the Texans, Deshaun Watson was falsely accused. They're all just after him for money, right? Best case scenario. You shouldn't be in those situations. Like, you shouldn't be with all these different massage therapists all the time that could, like, you're not a normal person, right? You and I can go get massages, no problem, and no one's going to try to sue us. If you're Deshaun Watson, you can't just go to random people in your towel getting your thighs worked on. Like, you just
can't. I hold a lot of tension in my inner thighs.
Yeah, you kind of release. You give you a massage to completion. And again, that's best case scenario. My number four, he's tough, but he's brittle. Derek Carr is brittle. He gets hurt all the time, and it affects his play. Go to in 2014. You remember 2014? He had that ankle sprain. He had the concussion, the rib bruise.
Hips.
2016, he had the messed up finger. So even though it was a great, but they couldn't do a lot of under the center.
Under
his finger was so fucked up, and. Like, he pulled his groin. This, you know, cost him a whole game, and we lost that game. And again, he's tough, so he plays through it, but it is drastically affecting his play. When did he destroy his entire back? 2017, right? Like, he just fractured everything in his back, and it was the worst statistical year for him. Threw like 17 picks. Like, he was all, not 17, but, you know, he was terrible in 2017 because he was playing through this body that just keeps breaking. And again, credit that he's tough. Right. That's the type of leader, and that's great. But his body just can't handle damage. It breaks all the time and affects his play.
All right. Very good Richard, point.
Number three.
Three. He's good at press conferences. So he gives. Hang on. He gives a lot of good information.
Third best thing.
Look, man, I'm trying.
I'm trying to half-ass this.
What are you trying to half-ass this?
All right. Let's hear what you got with Derek Carr at a presser. The third best thing about him. Please tell me about it.
He's good at press conferences, man. He's not going to bury anybody. He's not going to bury a franchise. He's not going to bury a coach. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to take a lot of responsibility on himself. You know, and that instills confidence.
That kind of goes with number four, but.
No, it's squeaky clean off the field. Oh my God, it's two different things.
The fact that you're trying is what's important to me. My number three, this is probably, I would say, your number one critique of him. It's my number three, conservative passer, right? You hate the check downs. You hate the dink and dunk. I think you give him too much shit for that. And again, we can debate all day long how much is him, how much is Gruden, how much is the system, you know, things like that. Almost 90% of his passes this last season, one of his best season ever, right? Is 2020 statistically one of his best ever. Almost 90% of his passes were under 20 yards. He's got a really good deep ball. He's one of the most accurate deep ball throwers in football.
He'll only throw it deep if they're wide open. Mm-hmm. He only throw it deep if he has,
at least a step and a half.
They're
like
or more.
Third and 27, or you're wide open, or you're down by three, right? Like, it has to, like, he needs to be forced to throw it deep. And he's great at it. He just, and then Fresno State, they just did this. It was four goes,
right? Like Fresno State ran this like awesome offense. So he knows how to do it. It's what he's been bred to do. Like it's his default setting.
Yeah.
And yet he just won't do it in the NFL either because he doesn't want to stay in the pocket that long and get hurt. John Gruden doesn't want him to. He doesn't trust his receivers. One of the multiple injuries we talked about. He's got a bazooka in his armory, but he leaves it there.
He's pulling out the 38. One of the things that really get me when people try to say stuff like, "Oh, it's the offense, is this is that," when BD was on, he said something like, "Oh, well, he threw it deep against the game winning play against the Jets. There was no other play.
Yeah,
that was the play to make. So I'm not going to give him credit for, well, he threw deep on that play. Well, what about that one? Well, yeah, that was the only play whatsoever. There was no other play to have. You look at Gannon. He wasn't looked at as a check down Charlie. You look at Brad Johnson. He wasn't looked at as a check down Charlie. Those guys still push it deep. Those are guys in John Gruden offenses. So that's why there is something to be said for the system, but like I've been saying for a long time, it is not a true West Coast system because there is a lot of deep stuff built in. Carr doesn't take the chance to throw it that often.
I think there's also a lot of
lack of continuity at receiver.
Well, and
I get it.
Well, and to your point, I think there's a lot of like deep routes put into the playbook just to kind of open everything up. It's like, all right, here's like your fifth read. If he's wide open, then throw it to Ruggs. But really, we're going to Waller on the over or like, you know, Renfro on the slant or something like that. So I think like just because there's some dude running a go, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's really part of it. I forgot which guest we had that did a really good job explaining, like, yeah, Gruden, almost every play has some guy going deep just to open up everything.
Sanjeet.
It says, yeah, Sanjeet was talking about that, which I think is, like you said, if he's wide open, then yeah, you have to do it.
Sanjeet also said that he checks down when there's plays to be made downfield. Mm-hmm. He said it both. But yeah. Okay.
Number two for you.
The way he encourages his teammates, the way he builds up his teammates. His teammates love him, man. His teammates love him, and I've never heard a teammate say a bad thing about Derek Carr. And this is on the field stuff. So they love and respect him, and that's something that's not always the case. Mm-hmm. And you know, like I said, when I played football, we didn't like our quarterback very much. And if he gets hit, you know, sucks to be you.
My bad.
Yeah, everyone loves Derek Carr. Everyone respects him. They know he puts in the work. He's the first guy out there. Voluntary OTAs, he's the first guy out there.
Yeah.
You know, you want to stick around and throw some balls? Cool, let's do it. You know, he's not going to tell anyone no.
Gruden had a great line about no matter what sport you're coaching, no matter what organization you're the leader of, your best players have to be your hardest workers.
Yeah.
It sets an example for everyone else. And that's what everyone says about Derek Carr. And you can tell too, it's not just like players saying general fluff. Like it's very rare for any player on a team to bash their quarterback. Very, very rare. But they could say simple things like, oh yeah, he's a leader, or he's been around a long time, or he has a great deep ball. Like you can tell they're not just like throwing out random shit. They're being very specific. It's like, oh, he cares about us.
Not even the ex-Raiders. Guys who have left don't say bad shit about Carr.
Yep.
That's usually when you hear it.
Mm-hmm. Number two for me. Only one left after this one. The number two biggest critique I have for Derek Carr. Red zone. Not great in the red zone.
Ooh, that's number one.
Now, again, similar to kind of the conservativeness, like you can't put 100% of the blame of the Raiders red zone issues on Derek Carr. But there's a lot you can. He was below average in the red zone. He completed just 53.8% of his passes. That's 27th in the league in the red zone. 3.1 yards per attempt, 26th in the league, and 15 touchdowns, 18th in the league in the red zone. So even when they did throw the ball, even when it wasn't just like three dives to Josh Jacobs, he still wasn't great.
Yeah.
Silver lining, only one turnover in the red zone. So like his problems in the other 80 yards of the field, he doesn't do it in the red zone. So that's like his one good thing. But everything else, it's, again, conservative play call part of it. But even when Gruden does give him the ball and say, all right, buddy, go to work, below average in just about every single metric other than turnovers. That's also, hopefully though, that's like a statistical anomaly. Hopefully that's one of those things where it's like kind of every season things, you know what I mean? I think he'll regress to the mean, because that doesn't really make sense as part of his game. Like the short game is his good game, right? So it's like, I'm hoping it's just a hiccup and not something that's going to stick with him. But there's no question that the Raiders offense was terrible in the red zone this season, and Derek Carr was a big chunk of the reason why.
Well, his issue outside of the red zone isn't that he can't throw the ball deep, like we said. It's not like the short game is his game. It's that's the riskier play to go deep. And it's safer to pass short. When you're in the red zone, there is no going deep. Everything's tighter. The windows are a lot smaller. So everything is risky.
Yeah.
And that's not his game, man. That's not his game.
Silver lining, he had 3 rushing touchdowns in the red zone this season. So if he can, I think a big reason why he's so bad there is he's such a not run threat, right? Like Lamar Jackson in the red zone, you're like, pick your poison, right? Like, with Derek Carr, it's like, what's he going to do, run? Yeah. So like they had him run a couple times. So maybe teams will be like, all right, maybe we kind of have to worry about Carr running. But for now, no bueno. All right, number one. The
nice
number one thing that makes you love Derek Carr and acknowledge that he is the guy for the Raiders.
He has some dreamy eyes. Those piercing blue eyes.
I knew you weren't going to take this serious. I knew there's no way. There's 100 good things you can say about Derek Carr.
Okay.
1 through 4 basically the same.
Okay. What are you talking about? Excellent pre-slap. As a person,
I'll pre-slap you after the show.
Excellent pre-snap. As a person, he's a top-notch quality person off the field. He's good at press conferences. He's not going to throw anyone under the bus. He's going to keep the team united. He's very encouraging of his teammates. Okay, and number one thing that I like about Derek Carr is he can make an unknown a star. He's done it twice already. Yeah. He can make an unknown player a star. He did it with Waller. He did it with Aguilar, who was basically a throwaway.
Yeah.
He was a throwaway pick. And when he builds confidence with you, he can make you a star. He's that good.
Touché. Very, very true. And he can make, like, again, I feel like he helped Rodney Hudson become a star as well, because they were so good pre-snap together that they helped each other. You know, Nelson Aguilar, now a $22 million wide receiver. He owes.
I don't know how the fuck that happened. I think fucking Belichick just fucking like Philly.
Blacked out.
Philly
woke
what?
Up.
He, like, yeah. He thought Aguilar was a rookie last year, like an unsigned rookie. I think, like, oh, this guy's pretty good. He forgot all about the Philly days.
Yep. All right. So my number one critique, and it's been my number one critique for as long as Derek Carr's been around. I don't even have to tell you. Goddamn fumbles.
Fumble.
He's got little tiny hands like me.
Fumbalaya.
And he fumbles all the time. He had 17 total turnovers this season.
Oof.
That was 11 fumbles, 6 interceptions.
11 fucking fumbles, bro.
11.
11 that he lost. That's not all his fumbles. Well, just the 11. Ones that he lost.
11. Which is way too many.
That's almost one a game.
It's not like he's a running back either. Like, he's a quarterback. And he's dropping
every
the ball
time he runs for the first down and he fucking sticks the ball out.
Yeah.
I want to shove it up his fucking nose, dude. Like, stop it.
He had 7 fumbles last season, 12 in 2018. So 12 in 2018, 7 in 2019, 11 in 2020. He had 11 fumbles last season. It's not even a career
he's
high.
Averaging
for him.
10 a year.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
The last
of fumbles.
He's averaging 10 a year his last 3 years. That is fucking
and it's
stupid.
A major, major issue. And on top of that, like, you've got a crap defense that's not going to, like, help your turnover ratio at all. You know what I mean? It's not like you got a defense that's like, all right, we'll get it back. Like, we'll get a pick. We'll get a fumble.
We got you, fam. Like, no, you don't. Jesus.
Maybe he can grow big hands or something. So mine, I actually took this seriously because I want to maintain the integrity of this segment and of this show. So I took this seriously. Dude. Number 5, slow to build chemistry with coaches. 2, tough but brittle. 3, conservative passer. 2, bad in the red zone. And 1, Captain Fumble Rooski. Yours was some like random 1 through 4 was basically the same. I knew you couldn't do this. I knew you couldn't take this seriously. So do I. I went in here with the best of intentions and you betrayed me.
You're welcome.
Do you want to do some what up windbags, or do you want to do some more?
Well, I kind of want to talk about this really quick. There's a couple things I want to talk about. First thing, Raiders Wire ranked, or they posted the rankings for the AFC West offenses.
Okay.
And what I'm thinking is, it just seems like they just put them in order of the quarterbacks they like. They didn't take a look at the entire offense.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm sure we can all agree on who the number one offense in the AFC West is. And that's
Denver,
the team over in misery.
Yeah, the tight end that will remain nameless.
Yeah, Kansas City. So their biggest strengths they put at quarterback, tight end, and guard. So it can be tough to argue with that. They lost a couple of guys on the wide receiver core. So you know they have Hardman and Hill back, mm-hmm. But you know. Like that guy that was on the dating show, a tight end, that guy was pretty good. So yeah, I agree with that. Then the next one they had was the Chargers, and they put their strengths as wide receiver and center, which is kind of weird. I mean, you would think that it would be something big, quarterback maybe.
I think this is a like sneaky way of them. Cause I think you're right. I think they all just kind of graded it by quarterback, but they can't say quarterback. Cause he's a second year quarterback. It's like, he just had this great freshman year and is going to have a sophomore slump next season. Yeah. Like that happens all the time. So I think they just like subconsciously they're ranking by quarterback, but they have to validate with something else. You're like, oh, they're wide receivers and centers. Great. Okay.
So I want to talk about an ex-Raider who actually was a Seahawk when he first started. Rick Meyer. Remember Rick Meyer?
No, it's been a while.
Rick Meyer was, he played for Notre Dame, and he was drafted really high by Seattle, and he had a pretty good rookie season. But then at his second year, teams found out he couldn't pass to the right. Like he could not turn and whip and pass to his passing side. He couldn't do it.
Which is weird because it's harder to throw across your body than it is to throw to your right.
Well, when you come up and you're looking, he just looked. It's easier for him to go this way. He couldn't pass to his right.
I wonder if he was like blind in his right eye.
I don't know, man. But that was like the thing is like, oh, yeah, just force everything to the right, and yeah, he'll give you shit. And yeah, man, he tanked after second year on. He tanked. So yeah, the second year is a big year. There's been quarterbacks who have had really good years their first year and just kind of flamed out after that. So hope. I mean, I'm not wishing anyone to have a bad season, but maybe against the Raiders every time, yeah, that'd be great.
I hope Justin Herbert's blind in his right eye, and we find out he can't throw to the right.
God damn,
blitz
man.
His ass from the left.
All right, kind of morbid, but okay. Number three, your Las Vegas Raiders, the third best offense in the AFC West, and they had their top positions at running back and tight end, which is offensively a no-brainer. Yeah,
correct. Yeah,
they have one of the best, if not the best, tandem of running backs in the league, and arguably one of the top two, three, worst three tight ends in the NFL.
And how many backup tight ends are better than Foster Moreau?
Yeah.
Derek Carrier is like average, and he's like barely going to see the field.
Yeah. Derek Carrier can play for some teams, and he's just kind of like one of the guys that's just out there
sticking around. Teams. Just too good to cut. He's going to stick around.
Good to cut. He'll stick around. And the fourth is Denver, and they put offensive tackle as their best offensive weapon. I mean, they do have a couple of running backs. They have, you know, a receiver.
I think they're just kind of assuming. I think it was Levi Damian who did this ranking. I think that he's just assuming the Chargers are going to have Justin Herbert improve, and they're not going to be like weighed down by a shitty head coach. Because a brand new head coach, like Chargers are a giant wild card with a second year, a first year head coach and a second year quarterback. Yeah, they've got names and talent everywhere, but like that's a giant wild card, huge wild card.
If because you remember Tyrod Taylor was a starter for the Chargers going into last year, and they simplified their offensive playbook for Justin Herbert, and because they wanted him to be comfortable, of course, because he wasn't taking the first team snaps up until week three, even week two when he started, he didn't take the first team snaps. Mm. Now, if he has a little bit of a Carr-esque thing with a new offense, maybe a new coordinator's going to mess with them a little bit.
Mm.
You know, that's the thing is you never know with these guys. You never know with these young quarterbacks. But yeah, I thought that was interesting You know, the 10th ranked offense in the league last year is ranked number 3 in our own division. Either that's a bunch of horseshit or we have a pretty fucking good offensive division.
Yeah. All right, ready to do some What Up Winbags?
Let's do it.
All right, we can get your What Up Winbags from either leave a comment on YouTube or you can send us a message on social media or you can email us theautumnwinbags@gmail.com. So that's either YouTube comments, you can send to us on social media, or email theautumnwinbags@gmail.com. First one, Damon LaFargo. How different would the mocks be if Mike Mayock were still working for NFL Network? The reason these look like reaches is because the top draft guy isn't breaking it down anymore. I look at this completely different. Like if Mayock had put the Raiders draft picks in the order that they were drafted as a member of the NFL Network, people would laugh at him. People would laugh at him, right? Yeah. Like I go the other way with it. I think it's like, you've got like the ESPN guys and they kind of build more or less the consensus in a lot of the media. And then you have a couple of wild cards and other networks, but like that doesn't like the ESPN guy doesn't really change too much. Those main two dudes. So with Mayock, it's the reverse. Like if Mayock put these guys where they were, he'd be the laughing stock. Completely different to me.
Yeah, it's totally different. Like when you're one of those draft pundit guys, like you do have to kind of fall in line. It's like the same 20 guys, 25 guys are in everyone's mock draft in the first round. They just move to up and down a couple of spots. I still think that John Gruden is the ultimate like line. I'm the line when it comes to drafting. I'm going to get the guys that I want. You give me input, Mayock, on who these guys are, but and maybe who to look at, but I'm the one who's going to make the selection.
You do all the homework, but in the end of the day, I'm going to make the
selection.
I'm going to pick a sweet name like Damian Diablo and Leatherwood.
Listen to this. Fred Warner from the 49ers got a stupid deal. He got a stupid, crazy deal. What was it like? Fucking $90-something million, like $40-something million guaranteed for like 5 years or something like that. Something crazy. He was drafted in 2018, Gruden's first draft back. Gruden drafted PJ Hall in the second round. And then Gruden traded up to the first pick of the third round to take Brandon Parker. 5 spots later, Fred Warner gets fucking picked. And this guy is hands down, everyone's saying top 1 or 2 linebackers in the NFL. This is the type of shit that I'm talking about with when you go for reaches. Oh, you don't know draft pundits and this and that, blah, blah, blah. When you draft a guy to be your right tackle, you move up in a draft. Let's forget about Fred Warner, but you move up in the draft to get Brandon Parker to be your right tackle. And the very next year, you have to sign, after he plays, you have to sign Trent Brown because Brandon Parker's dog shit. Mm. That's a waste of a fucking pick. A waste of draft capital, like you always say.
It's worse than a waste because now you have to do one of the worst contracts the Raiders have had the last few seasons with Trent Brown to make up for the problem. And the Raiders won't let go of Brandon Parker and give him 5th, 6th, 7th chance to be a starter because they don't want egg on their face that they traded up to draft him. And so now you're like, you're pushing this dude that's just not there.
Yeah.
It's a problem. Corey Kuhl.
Cool.
Kuhl. Kuhl. Corey Kuhl. RJ, are we really there already with Jonathan Abram? I know he had some mistakes last year, and when you're the last line, it really shows up when you make one, but the guy has only had 1 full year of playing time. This will be his 2nd season playing. I don't think we can say Abram sucks. A bit dramatic, bruh. You're better than that. Give this young guy a chance to grow and learn.
Huh?
I'm not saying cut him. Soda was the one that said that. Soda was the one that said, I'm surprised if he makes the roster. That. You said you were surprised if he makes the roster.
No, I didn't say that. I said the exact opposite.
I said, pull up the audio if you want.
Pull up and you pull his dick. Look, okay. I said I wouldn't. And I said, if his play doesn't improve, I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't make the roster. That's what I said.
I'd be shocked. I'd be absolutely shocked if he got cut because he's a first rounder. But this is my point. After Hunter Renfro, after his rookie year, and he played so much better than expected, right? Fifth rounder, right? Fifth round pick, right? We're like, oh, he's wow, he's really good. What great value. We got a great slot guy. I expected nothing from him. He's carved out a spot for himself. He's a starter now.
Reliable.
After 1 year, after rookie year, we're like, wow, that's really, really great. I didn't hear anybody say, dude, it's only been one season. You can't judge him after one season. That's not fair. Why? Because you can't judge after one season. You have no choice but to judge on the body of work that we have. And the body of work that we have for Jonathan Abram is dog shit. He's literally, literally the worst covered safety in the NFL by every metric available. I'm not saying give up on him. I'm not saying cut him. But I, based on what we have, he's terrible. He's probably still going to start next season. And so he'll have a chance with a better defensive coordinator, maybe a free safety that he trusts more, that he doesn't feel like he has to cover for. I'm optimistic, hoping that he'll grow and be better. But he played terrible last season, and saying anything different is just lying to yourself.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that shit. I'm not going to be Juan from West Covina saying that Jalen Hurts is the next Michael Vick, okay? I'm not going to say that shit because it's not true, and we all know it's not true. Abram did not play well last year. He played absolutely terrible last year. Terrible. If he doesn't improve, he won't see the field. Plain and simple.
Is there a worse player in our defense that we gave more rope to? Like, it wasn't even until halfway through the season where I was looking over Abram's numbers, and I'm like, God, this is bad. This is terrible. Because he'd lay one great hit, right? And so you're like, oh, wow, I like this guy. And then he'd have a bad, you know, cut a bad angle, miss the tackle, dive with his head down, miss somebody, bail uncovered and someone get caught. But then he'd lay like a hit, like a good hit on like a receiver or like a running back or something for a loss, cause a fumble or something. Like, yeah, Abram, that's my boy. I love how he's playing. And you forget all the terrible play that. If anybody got extra rope to hang themselves, it's Jonathan Abram. Like, we really wanted him to succeed and play well and gave him the benefit of the doubt. And he just refused to take advantage of that. So like, you picked the wrong guy, Corey, for us. Like, when we say guys suck, Abram's the one that truly does suck by every metric. And we gave him every opportunity to redeem himself.
If you want to see Jonathan Abram, his whole season in capsule in a nutshell, it's the Patriots game. Mm-hmm. He intercepted Cam Newton. He got a sack. He also let a lot of passes go. And he got burned by Burkhead on some just a ridiculous nothing move, basically, on a terrible angle. That's been his season. He's a feast or famine guy, and you don't need a feast or famine guy at safety because most of the time it's going to be a famine.
Rockethead says, y'all are tripping. Jacobs was getting hit behind the line on a regular. Something had to change. The O-line in general was never great at run blocking, and last year it was the worst. Yes, Jacobs lacks breakaway speed, but he does everything else as good as everyone. Gruden didn't do anything for Jacobs. He did what he had to do for the team. You don't bring in Drake because you want your first round pick to have a big year. Gruden brought him in to add another weapon. The Raiders are built to attack teams in any way they need to or want to. I feel like I've been very fair with Jacobs. And when I say I hope that the Raiders don't give him this massive contract, it's because, and this isn't a Raider, you know, running backs don't deserve big contracts and they're totally interchangeable. That's not what I'm saying. But you have to be really, really special to get that kind of money. And also, if there's any position where John Gruden is going to unnecessarily, flagrantly, and irresponsibly open up his wallet, it's running back.
Yeah.
It's running back. He's got a first rounder in Josh Jacobs, signed an $11 million 2-year player in Kenyon Drake. And why am I blanking?
An expensive.
Jalen Richard. Jalen Richard's making $3.5 million this season. He's making more than the starter. $3.5 million for a backup. Like,
yeah.
I don't like imagine what John Gruden will do when Josh Jacobs' contract comes up. He's gonna make him like a $15 million running back.
Yeah.
When he shouldn't be. So again, I don't hate Josh Jacobs. It's just the economics of the position and the economics of our, you know, if there was a strip club full of running backs, John Gruden would just be making it rain all day long. He'd be out there just. Yeah, gun, all $100 bills, just going to town, just shoving it in Jacob's G-string, Drake's G-string, like, just going to town. And he can't do that. You don't need to be paying $3.5 million to your third string running back. And that's what John Gruden does.
Yeah, so like I brought it up last week with Marcus. You look at tape from the Panthers game last year, the first game, Jacobs was quick. He was shifty, making guys miss. He was dragging guys a couple yards down the field. After the Saints game, the fourth game on, or the third game on, you didn't see it anymore.
Yeah.
You saw, you know, he's hurt shoulder, hurt ankle, this and that. You just didn't see that. He had to grind for everything. He wasn't shifty. He wasn't making guys miss. And it's not about being a game breaker or a speedster. It's just about being able to make that first guy miss. Because a lot of times in the NFL is one guy has a chance to bring you down. And if that one guy fucks up like Jonathan Abram did a lot of times, you're getting a big play. And if you're not able to make that guy miss, which he was able to make guys miss in the Panthers game, yeah, if you can't make that, if you can't be shifty in the first guy, it's going to be tough making those big plays.
Yeah, I mean, Gruden brought Drake in because Jacobs doesn't have breakaway speed. He's not the receiver that he keeps saying he wanted to be. And again, the jury's still out on Jacobs. Two seasons, right? Like we can judge him, but there's plenty of room for him to get better at things. Like he can improve. You know, we have enough of a body of work where we can fairly criticize or fairly give credit to, but he's what, 24, 23? Like,
he's a young kid, man.
Still young. He can still get better. And I hope he does.
Like last week when I hinted that Drake can make Jacobs better, it's because Jacobs is going to have a more defined role. He's going to be able to run a scheme that's more suited to him. He's not going to have to do a lot of the stuff that Drake's good at. He's just do the stuff that he's good at. And he's going to be more efficient with his chances he does get. If that's how I feel, Drake's going to make him better.
Well, until that day comes, knock on wood if you're with me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Auto Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure to go to manscaped.com using promo code WINBAGS for 20% off and free worldwide shipping. Also, make sure to check out our YouTube channel as well, the Autumn Windbags on YouTube. A lot of great stuff on there. Until next time, later.